Sairam, dear listeners, welcome to today's segment of Afternoon Satsang. And this week we will be continuing last week's topic. We have taken up the Navavidha Bhakti Marga, or the nine modes of devotion, or the nine types of devotion, as a general topic. And we are going through each of those nine modes one by one during the Navavidha Bhakti fortnight. And today happens to be the second week of the fortnight. And last week we had quite an interesting discussion on Namasmarana or Vishnu Smaranam, Shravanam, Kirtanam, and the third being Vishnu Smaranam. And in Vishnu Smaranam, we began by differentiating Vishnu Smaranam from Shravanam and Kirtanam. We also saw how possibly Vishnu Smaranam could be seen as a level higher than Shravanam and Kirtanam. We also saw how the reason behind it being called as Vishnu Smaranam, why not as Shiva Smaranam or Sai Smaranam or Brahma Smaranam? That was that Vishnu means the one who is
all pervading.
So basically it is a way of, it's a generic term meaning Smarana of God, or the one who is all pervasive is nothing but God. Then the discussion moved ahead to how Namasmarana is the best solution for the idle mind, which otherwise becomes a devil's workshop. For that we had that story of the genie, which is told to go up and down the pole, and Swami has said many times in his discourses that the pole on which the genie called the mind, which is capable of fulfilling any desire, should keep going up and down in times of leisure and rest is the pole of Namasmarana or God's name. And so from there we proceeded as to the how important it is that we be loyal to one particular name which is associated with one particular form. And Bhagwan in his discourses has compared this to Pativrata, or how one woman sticks to one husband and one husband sticks to one wife. That kind of chastity and that kind of purity and that kind of loyalty is necessary even when it comes to name and form. And because it's essentially the same Lord who responds through each name and form, but till we reach that level of being able to see Him or her or God or it in everything, we have to use the support wheels called the name and the form that we don't keep changing. It's like better to dig at one spot and go deep rather than dig 10 shallow wells and not find any water. So that was more or less what we discussed in great detail last week. And I think we shall proceed from there on this week. And as always, during any afternoon satsang, along with Swami who is present during every session, I would like to invite, welcome Brother Prem. Sairam Prem.
Sairam Arvind. Indeed, it's a very beautiful topic, and as we mentioned many times last week, this is definitely a topic which Swami has spoken so much about, and Swami would often say that this is the only thing that is needed to be done. And especially when Swami would give a discourse, we know that a variety of topics Swami would cover. Swami would speak about, you know, pure Advaita. Swami would speak about Vedanta. And at the end of it, Swami would always finish with a bhajan, just kind of suggest that, you know, all of this can be attained if you do smarana, if you do take the name of the Lord. Mm. And that's how important it is. And as we mentioned last week, you know, one way where we can say that this is different from Kirtanam is both Shravanam and Kirtanam is involving your, you know, karmendriyas or your outer senses. Be it whether you're singing or you're clapping your hands and singing or you're walking around and singing. Mm. It's all using your, you know, your cognitive, not just your cognitive, but your physical senses.
Correct.
But this is one, when you come to Smarana, you are actually going internal, where it has to be done even when you are probably not expressing it in a gathering. And that is why Smarana becomes important. You do it, you know, unconsciously also. And we will see that is how important it is. It's not just consciously taking the point and thinking about the Lord, but even when not prompted or propelled, you tend to think of the Lord.
And in that context, interesting side discussion that came up was about how we should refrain from judging others' spiritual level or spiritual growth or spiritual progress, because while we get an idea about how people are expressing themselves, mostly through kirtana, that is through writing or through speaking or through the karmendriyas, as you said, a lot of spiritual activity happens through things other than the karmendriyas, and that is something we don't get to see or hear or experience possibly. And so therefore, I think in spiritual field we should concentrate only on our own spiritual growth, not being concerned in the sense, not being invasive of what others are doing or how much they are progressing, not using anybody else as a comparing point. We should be our own comparison point, where we progress every time to time, on a daily basis, monthly basis, yearly basis. What I am today should be better than what I was in the past, and that should be the stepping stone to rise higher into what I will be in the future. And that was the aside that also we derived during last week's satsang.
In fact, I'm reminded of a quote which one of our teachers once told us in the class, you know. He said, your true character is that which you do when you are absolutely sure that nobody will come to know of it. And I think that's precisely what defines smaranam. You know, when you are doing it when nobody knows, you know, probably to the world, you might be sitting there and, you know, writing something or reading something or sitting and, you know, doing your nothing. Office work, or in fact, just sitting idle waiting in an airport for your flight or whatever. But at that time, if you choose to do namasmarana internally and, you know, not even having probably a japmala in your hand and you're doing, it really means that you value taking the Lord's name in your mind and you kind of relish it, or either way, you either value it or you relish it. And then you do it. And Swami in fact told that even when you don't relish it, you should know that it's very valuable and do it. In fact, Swami would say that, give that beautiful analogy of how, you know, you get accustomed to a particular taste. And you start taking the name again and again, you start getting, you know, accustomed to it, and then you start doing it with relish. And about doing it silently, I think there's a very beautiful Chinakatha which Swami would often say. You know, about this kingdom where there is this queen who's a very, very devout lady. She's devoted to Lord Rama, and she would always do pujas and abhishekams and archanas to the Lord. And she would find that her husband, who is the king of the land, is completely, you know, cut off from this kind of relationship with God. He would not even utter the name of the Lord. He would not attend pujas. He would not come to the temple. And she would say that, I've not even heard him say the Ramnam even once. So she would, Swami says that she makes a resolve in her mind that the day I hear the king take the name of the Lord, you know, I'm going to give a big feast to all the Brahmins and the poor people in the kingdom. We're going to have a huge festivity there. And Swami says that one day when, you know, they're sleeping in the night, the king and the queen are in their bedroom. When the king turns around, you know, when you're sleeping, when you change sides. So when he changes sides, he kind of, in a very soft whisper, he says, Ram Ram. Okay, and the wife, I mean the queen hears that, and she's so jubilant having heard that from the king's mouth. So the next day she wakes up and she orders a huge feast, the festivities all around the city. And the king is wondering what's happening now. You know, I mean, what warrants this kind of celebration all of a sudden? So he then goes and asks the queen that, what is happening, you know, is there anything, any event that is being planned? So then the queen says that, no, this is what my resolve was and this was my prayer. And I heard. And the moment the king hears that, he starts, you know, crying. And then the king says, oh, that precious name which I had kept hidden in my heart all these years has at last come out.
Wow.
And that is when the wife realizes that, you know, the king is so very devoted to the Lord that he is always in the contemplation of the Lord, but never once uttered it outside for anybody to hear. And some would say, you know, that is how you should treasure the Lord's name.
Absolutely. And that is one. On one hand, it's about treasuring the Lord's name. On the other hand, it shows the dangers of judging.
Right.
You know,
right.
Speaking of that, I'm reminded of another Chinakatha that Swami would narrate. I don't know if it concerns Ubhaya Bharati or, but Swami would narrate about a couple, both of whom have decided to give up everything for the sake of the Lord. And having renounced everything, they are walking. And as they are walking, the man happens to see a golden bangle on the street. on the path. So he just suddenly gets a thought that, you know, if my wife sees, possibly it will wake up her latent vasanas, her old instincts. She may want to, she may get tempted to pick up the bangle because it's golden. And therefore, in order to prevent that from happening, in order to prevent temptation from entering his wife, Swami says that this man kicks dust over that bangle. He kicks some dirt over it to cover the bangle. The wife happens to notice this. And when she sees this, she says that, I thought we were renunciants, but I feel that that is not the case, because you still see a difference between mud and gold. You still feel that that is gold and this is mud.
It's more precious and that is...
Yeah, that is more precious, this is less precious. So you still have that distinction, and it's not that everything is the same. So you see, here is the husband fearing that his wife may not be up to the mark, only to discover later that he is grossly not up to the mark compared to where his wife is. So therefore, yeah, as an aside, during this satsang on Namasmarana, I think we can surely infer and learn that when it comes to spirituality, it's a very individual path. And it's best that we judge nobody else other than ourselves. Swami would say, if you have to criticize, criticize yourself. Find the faults in you and rectify them, because once you rectify all your faults and become perfect, the world is perfect. There are no faults, because Swami never found any fault in the world as such. You know, Swami would always say everything is perfect, that Srishti is perfect, the problem is only in the Drishti. So if at all you see imperfection, it's time to start correcting the Drishti and not blame it on the Srishti.
Right. And when we talk of Namasmarana, and as we have defined it, it's so much got to do with thoughts rather than, you know, words and what you do, where you are. When you spoke about Shravanam, that's what we said, you know, what are the inputs that you're allowing to get into your system. And Kirtanam is how you spend your time, but when you speak about Smaranam, it becomes so much more internal and about thoughts. So I think when we speak about Smaranam, it's important to probably mention so many things which Swami says about thoughts. We've spoken many times. One thing is, Swami would often say that, you know, don't judge yourself based on one bad thought. The problem comes when you start expressing those thoughts, you know, when you start giving expression in actions to some of those thoughts. In that context, I think Swami has said this, that we must have referred to this earlier too, where Swami would say that the moment a bad thought comes, counter it with a good thought. And one very, very effective way Swami would teach us is, you know, when suddenly anger comes or a spout of pride and ego comes, Swami would say, just stop and say, Swami, I offer this to you. You know, make that a habit. So it is not like you've completely given up all those things, but you kind of, you know, with time you practice and you get the thing that every time a thought like this happens, by default, this thought of, Swami, I offer this to you comes. And Swami said that it's a very, very effective. I think when we were speaking to Sonam sir, he was saying that, you know, he has had this a number of occasions where Swami would point out to him and say that, you know, this is where you're flawed and this is where your ego is showing up and all that. So at one particular point, you know, Swami calls him for an interview room after one such episode where Swami has kind of ignored him and all that. He falls at Swami's feet and he says, Swami, what do I do? You know, this ego keeps coming. What do I do? Swami says, nothing to worry. Every time it comes, think of me, imagine my form in front of you and put it at my feet and say, Swami, Saishwar Arpanam. And I think all of this constitute that what we call Vishnu Smaranam. You know, that is why I think probably we're going to go to the next explanation of Vishnu Smaranam. When do we take the name of the Lord? We spoke about Vishnu being the all-pervasive one, which means he is the ultimate God, not just a deity. But Vishnu also means the God who does not have a fixed place. So it is not like only Brahma Murtam, only this particular time where the Abhishekam is being done, or this is the time, only on Shivratris you think of Swami, only on particular festivals you think of the Lord. The Lord who is all-pervasive can be thought of at all times, at all places. And that is another definition.
Sarvada sarvakaleshu sarvatra harichintana. Swami would often say that in the discourses. You know, actually when you were talking about developing a countering thought, I was reminded of this little incident, maybe we have narrated it. This was an experience of Professor Bhagya from the management studies department. So he was saying that he asked this very question to Swami, you know, like, how do we control bad habits or how do we combat against them? So during the minute he said that, Swami became serious. He took one letter that somebody had written to him on a foolscap paper, a long paper, and Swami began to roll that paper, you know.
Right.
And Swami made a kind of a baton baton with the sheet. And Bhagya sir said that he thought that Swami is possibly going to hit him on the head or something with that for asking a question which is possibly as flimsy as how do you give up a bad habit. Swami looked at him, raised the baton and put it onto his lap. You know, and as he put it, the paper, because it had been rolled in one way, it developed a kind of a concave surface.
Right,
it was bent. It was curved. Swami said, straighten that paper. So Bhagya sir was a little puzzled, but he promptly took the paper, turned it around and rolled it up in the opposite direction. And then the paper became straight. So, and then he gave that to Swami. Swami said, what did you do to make it straight? Said, Swami, I rolled it in the opposite direction. And then Swami told him, that's exactly what you do with a bad habit. Develop a countering good habit. You know, develop something that is countering, which is in the opposite way. And that is what Bhagya sir later revealed about this beautiful way that Swami suggested to give up. And rather than, you know, developing, say, yeah, whether it's a good habit or whether it's a good thought, it's the same thing, it's the same technique, I think. So, and therefore, instead of thinking of something good, why not think of God? Because God is the highest good that we can have. And again, that highlights the importance of Namasmarana, because in such situations, if we think of the name of the Lord, I think there can not be anything better to counter either a negative habit or a negative thought or a negative word.
Right. That's all of these techniques are meant for that. You know, that is why to understand Vishnu Smarana, Namasmarana is very, very akin to understanding and controlling of thoughts and minds. And I'm reminded of this joke, which I've probably narrated a couple of times before. There is this concept, they say, you know, where if you put out your forefinger, you would see that everybody's forefinger has at least a little bit of, you know, shakiness in it. If you just observe it for some time, you'll see that there's a little bit of
vibration
in it. And they would say that that's a sign of a wavering mind.
Oh.
Right? So, I mean, I don't know how far it's true, whether it's somebody's example or whatever it is. So I remember, you know, in one of our classes, we had discussed this. And, you know, how do you stop a shaking finger? Let's say that your finger is really shaking. And the best way is to put it on a table or a chair, which kind of is stable. And it makes your finger also stable. So we had given this analogy that how do you stabilize a wavering mind? You have to place it on something which is most stable. And the Lord is the most stable. So as much as possible, place all your thoughts on Him, and that's how your mind becomes stable too.
Lovely. You know, if I can just go along the same line, I remember a talk that was given by Shri S.V. Giri sir.
Okay.
When he was the Vice Chancellor of the University. He was talking about the beauty of human birth. So in that context, he mentioned this yogic mudra, you know, the one in which the middle finger, the ring finger and the little finger are standing.
Switched.
And the index finger and the thumb are forming a loop, a circle. And in that he said that the thumb symbolizes Paramatma and the index finger Jivatma. So going by your analogy, another way to stabilize the index finger is to support it by the thumb. When the Paramatma supports the mind, it becomes stable. The other point that Giri sir made, which was very beautiful, equally beautiful, was the fact that it's only humans that have got an opposable thumb.
Right.
Which means the sanctity of human birth is such that only humans are capable of joining with the Paramatma. That is the beauty of human birth. Just as you said that we support the forefinger on the table,
right.
I remembered that we can also support it on the thumb, which is symbolic of the Paramatma, which again comes down to Namasmarana.
Absolutely. And of course that, whenever I narrate this, I'm reminded of the joke which happened after that.
Huh?
Because I remember after this presentation, one of my classmates came and said, you know what, you guys made that presentation. That technique really works. You know, this classmate of mine said. I said, what is that technique which works? I mean, I did not utter any technique which really works for me. What did you find that it works for you? So he said, no, whenever I find that my mind is very wavery or my thoughts are all around the place, I put my finger on the table, he said.
Oh, God.
So I said, all right, if it works for you, why not? Right. I think the idea of Vishnu Smarana itself is that, you know, and in fact, in one of Swami's discourses in the Samukha, Swami says this. There are three flaws in the mind, Swami says. You know, one is when the mind is wavering. That's one of the flaws in the mind. And the best way to counter it is by thinking of the Lord In fact, all of the Navaveda Bhakti is actually used for controlling the wavering of the mind. And we can see that Vishnu Smaranam is so very pertinent to this particular problem which all of us face. And this is actually the starting point of really your devotion to Swami in many ways. Because we will see that after this, it comes to giving up. You know, when we talk about Vandanam, when we talk about Archanam, Padasevanam, till now you're only in that stage of, you know, making contact. After this, it comes to an active devotion stage, and to start off that active devotion stage, you need to have this mind control and this ability to focus your mind on God. So at this point, we'll take a break, because after this, as we said, we're going to talk about Vishnu Smaranam as Vishnu being the all-pervading God.
Hari 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 Smarana Karo.
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 Hari Charana Kamala Dhyana Karo.
Hari Charana Kamala Dhyana Karo.
Hari Charana Kamala Dhyana Karo.
करो
मुरली माधव सेवा करो मुरली माधव सेवा करो
Welcome back, dear listeners. We continue where we had left off. There is this story of Ajamila that is often quoted, you know, as the example to show the power of Namasmarana. And for the benefit of all of us, I would like to recount that story once again over here. I think this is a story from our
Bhagavatam,
from the Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam, which shows the, which is nothing but a recapitulation of all the stories related to Vishnu and the avatars of Vishnu. So, Ajamila is a pious Brahmin who has been brought up in all good culture and good background. It is said that once while going through the fields, he sees a man and woman engaged in an intimate behavior,
mm-hmm.
and that inflames his senses, inflames his passion, and arouses him, and therefore he's so attracted to that woman over there. She is a woman of ill repute, but he decides to get her home in spite of him being married and having children. And she begins to live with him like a wife. And it is said that he gives up the entire family and goes behind her and starts getting so many children through her.
Mm-hmm.
No, when you read this, you are reminded of what Krishna tells Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, where he says that whatever the mind contemplates upon, it begins to get attracted to it. The senses get attracted to it and it gets attached to it. Attachment leads to desire. Desire leads to anger. Anger leads to loss of memory. Loss of memory leads to loss of discrimination. And once you lose discrimination, you have lost it completely. So the path of ruin begins with what you contemplate upon. And in Ajamila's case, that's exactly what has happened. He has had a very good grounding, a very good family background. He is trained. He knows what is right, what is wrong. He has discrimination. Yet the scene that he sees inflames his passion so much that he is unable to take his senses away from that. And by thinking of that, he gets attached to that. He begins to desire that. And it is such that, yes, he gives up everything. Finally, it leads to a kind of loss of discrimination itself, as it is said in the Bhagavad Gita. That's what happens in the case of Ajamila. So he becomes a person of loose character, and many people speak ill of him, and he's totally gone. You know, it's totally demolished. He has multiple children, and I think possibly the 9th or 10th child is his favorite.
Okay.
And he has named him as Narayana. Okay. Mm-hmm. Because of whatever, maybe his previous upbringing and all that, he's still a devotee of Narayana. So he has named him as Narayana. And then it is said that one night as he is sleeping, he sees Yamadutas, the messengers of death, coming to take him off. And that is when, you know, the scenes of his life go before his eye quickly. He realizes that this kind of a treatment is reserved for the sinners. You know, it is said that the angels come and pick you up if you have been a noble person, take you to heaven, and these Yamadutas or the messengers of the Lord of Death come and pick you up if you have been a sinful person, because accordingly you are given a lowlier life to work out your karmas. So when he sees these Yamadutas, they're really scary. In whatever picturization we have seen, they're really scary. So he starts getting very scared, and he knows that nobody can possibly save him. So when they come near to catch him, that is when he calls out to his son, and that to his favorite son, hoping that, not that his son will save him or anything, just that it's like a drowning man clutching at straws. So he calls out to his son. He says, Narayana, Narayana, Narayana. And it is said that the minute he calls that out, the angels of Lord Narayana, the Narayana Dutas, they come. And they tell the Yamadutas that you can't touch Ajamila. And the Yamadutas say that, come on, he's such a sinful person. We have orders to take him and go. They say, you may have your orders. We have orders that we have to take him to Vishnu Lokam. We have to take him to Vaikuntha, because he has called out to the Lord at the time of death. And it is said, finally, you know, ultimately in the story, what happens is Ajamila indeed attains Lord Vishnu, because of this single act of thinking of the Lord as his moment of death drew near. He thinks of the Lord and he gets Vishnu Lokam. And many times we have also heard Swami saying that the mind is something that travels across birth. You leave your body behind, but the mind attaches itself and goes. Therefore, Swami would say that what determines your next birth is what is your final thought before leaving this. And if your final thoughts before leaving the body is Narayana, is Lord, that is what you will attain. You will get a higher birth, a nobler birth, a better birth. And I feel, you know, this story is often quoted to show the power of Namasmarana, the power of the Lord's name, that even a person of Ajamila's fall, he had been such a noble person and he has such a big fall and such ill repute and such a sinner. Even such a person, when he is taking the Lord's name, such is the power of the Lord's name that it has the capacity to liberate you.
And every time Swami would refer to this story, he would always add this Chinnakatha along with it. Right?
Yes.
And this story is this, there is this man who is actually a shopkeeper. He has a shop which is kind of a provision shop or something. And he has always heard the story of Ajamila, and he's decided that, you know, by hook or crook, the last moment of my life, I have to take the name of the Lord. So what does he do? He names four children, all the four children that he begets, gives them all Krishna's name, Govinda, Rama, Krishna, Madhava, or whatever the four names have been given. And he says that, you know, whatever happens in the last moment of my life, I'm going to think of any one of these boys. So that way I'm definitely going to end up taking, you know, Krishna's name or Vishnu's name. So I'll be saved. You know, I'll have a good life after my death. So this man finally, you know, lives out his entire life, so committed to his shop and making money and his business and his family life. Finally, he is diseased, he is bedridden, he is about to die, and finally he realizes that this could probably be his last day. And even as he's sitting, he remembers, you know, I have to call all these boys. So he starts calling, you know, Rama, Krishna, Govinda, Madhava, all of them. And immediately all these four sons come running to the father. The father looks at all of them and he says, all four of you are here. Who is taking care of my shop?
And
he dies. And Swami says, see, what is the point? You know, all your life you have planned for it. But at that last moment you die thinking of your shop. Because that is what has occupied all of your time. And Swami would say, see, that is the whole problem. Yes, last minute taking the Lord's name is very, very important. But that ability to take or remember the Lord in the last minute will never come if you have not practiced thinking of him when you were healthy and when you were living a happy life.
You know, in fact, I was thinking like in the Lord's case, there's nothing like luck. It's purely about your efforts, maybe in this birth or across births, is bearing fruit. So I used to think that, you know, possibly Ajamila was one lucky case, you know. He just got it right and, you know, he didn't have a shop to worry about. But as I read through the story of Ajamila in a little more depth, you know, there are two things that show that it's not a lucky break, or not that, you know, God says that, boss, you won a lottery, so you go through. Ajamila goes through, but the shopkeeper doesn't. What it said was, once the Narayan Dutas come, Narayan Dutas symbolize life, and Yamadutas symbolize death. So basically, yes, Ajamila was saved from death by taking the name of the Lord. But then the story goes on to say that then when he wakes up, he doesn't know whether it was a dream or whether it was an experience. He doesn't know whether in his dream he saw the Yamadutas or whether they had really come, but whatever, he's thoroughly shaken with his experience. And then they say, because of his all said and done, he was born in a noble family and he's grown in that environment. That stands him in good stead at this moment, and he says that, what have I done with my life? That very moment, in one instant, he is able to fill his mind with such thoughts that make him renounce all those sinful ways. Just like he slipped in one moment because of his mind being so occupied on something, he is able to slip out of that and get into the good thing also, because in his early life, he has practiced so much. He has done so much of good sadhana. He has done possibly namasmarana and all that. Because of which it is said that he gives up everything and makes his way to Kashi, Banaras. He goes to Banaras and spends almost a decade there, engaged in contemplation of the Lord, engaged in sadhana. At the end of which, he attains Vishnu Loka. So it's not as if he said Narayana and he got a Vishnu Loka. After that, see, that was a break definitely that was given by the Lord, but he had the sadhana, he had the patience, the perseverance to make use of that break to ensure that he doesn't falter again. And so you see, it's not that even Ajamila got redeemed just because he took Narayana's name when the Yamadutas came. It is because of the penance he has done after that. And the penance he did after that was thanks to the kind of upbringing he has had and the kind of grounding and the importance that he gave to the Lord before. That's why it would come back. So you get back only what you have sown. If you have not sown it, you won't reap it. Therefore, it is important that we begin sowing, so that even by a stroke of misfortune or something, if we have to stray, we have sown the seeds properly. When they bear harvest, the fruits are definitely going to be of the devotional and the spiritual type. And just like Ajamila, we too will have hope of returning. So the moral of both these stories, I feel, is that we have to start sowing right away. We have to start this namasmarana and thinking of the Lord as soon as possible, and not think of shortcuts and think in a cunning manner that when I'm going to die, I will think of Swami.
It reminds me of a, you know, very famous, I think it's a typical chicken soup story, you know, where there is this 10-year-old boy who goes to the beach and kind of gets pulled away by the waves. And just then a man comes there, probably a lifeguard, and he jumps into the water and saves this boy's life and, you know, brings him to the shore. And this boy is so grateful, you know, he looks at this man and he says, "Sir, thank you so much, you saved my life." And this elderly person just looks at the boy and says, "Don't thank me, boy. Just ensure that your life was worth saving." And he walks away. I think it's so profound. I think all of us have really, you know, what have we done to probably come to know of Swami or have Swami in our lives? And I think it's no point looking at Swami every day and, you know, or once in a while and say, "Thank you, Swami." I think it really means that, you know, now that I've come to your life, make use of it. You know, make your life worthy of my presence. You know, don't just stand there probably thinking that, okay, it's a stroke of luck and that's all I need.
So, now that we understand the importance of Namasmarana, one question that often comes is, see, I'm a very busy person. I've got so many things to do. Where is the time for Namasmarana? I don't know, is half an hour enough? 1 hour per day enough? That is the question that often arises. So, how much time frame do you think I should do Namasmarana? Yeah, because last time, you know, when we gave the story of the genie, we said, give the mind, don't keep it idle. Let it do all the work. When the work is all finished, let it do Namasmarana. Now someone will say that, you know, my work is so tiring. I start at 6 in the morning, I end at 9 at night. And if I want, they're ready to give me more work to me also. You know, if I work more, I can earn more, whatever. Different things are there. Mm-hmm. So where do I have time for Namasmarana?
In spite of it, if you have any little time left, you have enough games on your mobile. I mean, it's really a valid point because, you know, now we are in that state where the mind is always restless and you have enough times to fill that, you know, or kind of feed that restless mind. You know, so many things, as we've mentioned it before, you know, with the number of gadgets we have around us, the number of things which we can do, you know, even the children of these days, it's like that. You can't, I mean, there is no concept of a child sitting alone for some time. You know, it's got to be doing something. It's either got to be playing with somebody or being told something, or it should have a mobile, the child should have a mobile in the hand. So we are in that period of time where we don't really have time and say that, okay, this time I have absolutely nothing to do, so I can sit and do Namasmarana.
So I think therefore it is important that we make it a priority and make time for it. Do I say that, I remember, you know, one of our top singers here, I think it was Ashwat Narayan. I remember one day his voice was a little bad and so he had not sung. The next day also he didn't sing, possibly because Swami didn't indicate to him or whatever. In a thrice session, Swami looked at him and asked him, why didn't you sing today? And then he said, "Swami, if you tell me to sing, I'll sing." And, you know, if we pause here and look at it, it's a very good answer. I mean, nice answer. What it is, "Swami, you want me to sing? I'll sing." Swami said, "Did you ask me before eating food? Did you have food today?" "Yes, Swami." "Did you ask me?" "No." And Swami left it at that. But, you know, it struck me so much that I never say that I don't have time to eat my food. Of course, there are some who are doing that also. I don't say there's no time for my entertainment or no time for my sleep. No time. Fine, even if I might sacrifice a bit of my food, a bit of my sleep, a bit of my drink. But as I say, when we have to go for our ablutions, when we have to answer the important calls, we find time for it simply because it's a priority for us. It's a priority. I want to look good. I don't want to wet my pants. So whatever it be, even if I'm in the middle of a very important business meeting, I excuse myself, go out, and it's simple a matter of priority. I mean, do you mean to say that those 2-3 minutes are more important than your meeting? Yes, they are, because it's a priority. So I feel Namasmarana too, you know, forgive the kind of example I gave, but I feel it's all about making it a priority. We have to make Namasmarana a priority, and, you know, that is what is more important than the amount of time we do Namasmarana. I am reminded of this famous story of Narada going and asking Vishnu. I think Swami has also narrated
right,
this.
Right.
Of Narada asking Vishnu who is his favorite devotee, and Vishnu points out to a farmer. And Narada is upset because how can a farmer be a greater devotee? I am thinking of the Lord. I am chanting his name 24 hours a day. Well, let me see what this farmer does. He goes and observes the farmer. And he sees that this farmer, before starting his work in the morning, chants the name of the Lord. then goes about his work, comes back, before having lunch, chants the name of the Lord, thanks the Lord, and then has his lunch, sleeps, gets up, goes, works, comes back, and again, at before resting at night, chants the name. Only thrice a day? And we know what happens next, right? Vishnu tells Narada, okay Narada, I have one task for you, will you do it for me? And Narada says, Lord, what will I not do for you? Anything, you just name it, I will do it for you. Vishnu says, I have this pot of oil, I want you to carry it for one full day. You know, carry it all around, wherever you go. Just ensure that not a drop spills out of it. Because there are different versions of the story. One of the versions says that, just think that even if one drop falls out, you lose your neck. That's the kind of a condition that Vishnu puts, and Narada agrees. And he carries this pot, and to his credit, we must say that he carries it around successfully without dropping even one drop of oil. And when he returns, Vishnu asks Narada, Narada, how many times did you take my name? Narada says, Lord, where I was doing the task that you told me to do, where I was so focused on ensuring that the oil drop doesn't fall, I don't think I took your name even once.
Mm-hmm.
And then Vishnu says, it is with that same kind of dedication and love that that farmer is working there, and yet he is able to think of me thrice. So it is not important how many times we take the name. It's about we making a priority. Thinking of the Lord a priority and setting aside some time and energy in order to do it.
Right. I think that's a very, very important point in that sense of, especially the kind of life we're all leading. You know, one thing is to have a structured way of thinking of the Lord. And as we said, that should kind of spill over a state where you think of the Lord by default. You know, when left alone, the first thing you would do is probably go and grab Ramaswarma, you know, that way. Just like how we right now do, you know, with little time, whatever little time I have, you know, suppose I'm reading a novel, I'm doing something like that. Every time I get a space in between, I would try to go back to that novel, which is most enchanting for me. I think that should become the case with Namaskarna, where you start by saying that, all right, I start my morning with, you know, in the God's name, or in the afternoon I do this, or in the evening I do this, to the point where every time my mind is let loose, it automatically runs to the Lord's feet. I think that is the state which will eventually come.
Absolutely. And I like that analogy that you said about how we like to read, if we are reading an absorbing book, how I remember it, especially during our college days.
Right,
I would just wait for that period to get over.
We would gobble lunch
and come back so you can read that book fast. Yes. So if Namasmarana becomes like that, awesome, it's fantastic. But you know, till it becomes like that, when we start off in this manner, say we set aside some time, and the other problem that comes is, you know, when I gave the example of answering nature's call, we find time for it every time, as I said. But you know, that is a kind of a menial, physical job, you know, which Namasmarana is not, because we ourselves said that, you know, Namasmarana is not about just parroting the name of the Lord. It is much more, you know, it involves your feelings, it involves your emotions, it involves your deepest self.
Right.
So, though that example of answering nature's call was given, that's a very mechanical thing. I don't, you know, it doesn't require much involvement from me. I just have to set aside the time and that's it. But in the case of Namasmarana, it is not like that. Apart from setting aside the time, I need to have, when we start off, definitely we need to have the mood. We need to have a peaceful atmosphere. So the next, question or problem that arises is, what if I'm not able to find like that scenario? You know, I'm not able to find a peaceful room when as I quoted it often, it happens. When I sit for meditation, only the donkey near my house brays. So I don't have a peaceful atmosphere. I don't have a conducive atmosphere. Possibly, I'm ready to pull out time. You know, I'm traveling, say, by local train in Mumbai. Local trains in Mumbai are one harrowing experience. You know, by the time you end up in office, it's as if you have got into a fist fight. It's almost like that. So, yeah, I have 1 hour free there, but how do I do Namasmarana? Means, how do I ensure that I have a conducive atmosphere for Namasmarana? That possibly is the next question that comes.
Right, and I think...
Yeah, so, means, in the sense, how do I create a conducive atmosphere, or what is a conducive atmosphere for Namasmarana, and how do I create it?
Right. In fact, you know, when we speak about prayer, when we speak about especially saying a fixed time for prayer, you can I mean, the scenes which come to our mind is, you know, somebody who's just had a bath and wearing clean clothes, probably whites to be, you know, preferred, and in your puja room where all the agarbati and everything is going on. And many times, you know, all of these actually add to that ambience which allows you to think of the Lord, you know, especially when you go into a temple. All of the imagery which is created around there and this, you know, the sensory objects which are placed there is meant to tune yourself. In fact, even in the ashram, and then many people come and ask us, you know, why is it that you're not allowed to wear shorts? Why is it that you're not allowed to, you know, wear sleeveless in the ashram? This is the main reason. You know, when you actually go into a place where you see people dressed modestly, when you see people dressed for a spiritual gathering, you automatically, your thoughts also get streamlined towards that. So it is definitely all of these adds up to that ability to sit and think of the Lord. But I think we don't stop till such a situation comes so that you can think of the Lord. And the best example, which analogy which somebody would give is, if you're going to sit and wait for a clean road without any traffic to learn, you know, how to drive in traffic, you'll never learn. You have to go into the traffic to know how to drive in the traffic. And I think that's the same thing with Namasmarana, because if Namasmarana is supposed to be a tool which is going to take you beyond your difficulties in life, you can't wait, keep waiting for a stretch of time where you won't have any difficulties and say that I'll think of the God, think of Lord when there are no troubles.
Which means, irrespective of our situation in life, we have to think of the Lord, because there's, as we said, that is the other definition of Namasmarana. We said Vishnu Smaranam, which is thinking Sarvada, Sarvakaleshu, Sarvatra. We may be possibly embroiled in the deepest of crisis, and yet it's a good time to think of the Lord. I'm reminded of some of the extreme times in which people have thought of the Lord. The foremost example that comes to mind is Draupadi. Draupadi thought of the Lord in a situation, the most turbulent of situation. That is when she was being dishonored and disrobed in an open Kaurava court. And at that point in time, you know, imagine if Draupadi was thinking that I am not able to think of the Lord because I need a conducive situation. There's no, it is a worse kind of situation. Actually, in that sense, if we see, possibly it's easier for us to think of the Lord in a very difficult situation, because all other thoughts are almost cut off.
It's a state of such hopelessness, because, you know, around you is a scene where you're seeing that the evil people have actually had an upper hand. You're seeing that goodness has been defeated. You know, there can't be a more hopeless situation than, you know, Draupadi was right in the middle of that, and she takes the name of the Lord.
And it's amazing, you know, I remember we were having this discussion the other time. It's so amazing what Namasmarana does, because till then, when we see the picturizations or visualization of the scene, Draupadi is fighting, she's holding on to her sari, she doesn't want to let go, she's calling out to Krishna. She calls out to Krishna as Hridayavasi. Swami uses this example that she calls Mathura Vasi Krishna, Gokula Vasi Krishna, Brindavana Vihari Krishna, and Krishna doesn't seem to be responding. Finally, you know, Draupadi says Hridayavasi Krishna, and instantly Krishna is there. And Swami would say that, when you say Mathura Vasi Krishna, I had to travel till Mathura and then come to you because of the kind of definition, the way you are defining me. I am how you define me to be. If you define me as Gokula Nivasi Krishna, I have to go to Gokula and then come to you. But today, but when you say Hridaya Vasi Krishna, I am closest, I am in your heart. Instantly I respond. So Swami would also use this example to impress on us as to how important it is that we develop a heart-to-heart connection within our own selves with our Lord, rather than, you know, have a very distant relationship, like a long-distance relationship. So she calls out to Krishna, and the next moment, you know, of course, Krishna provides her with a Guinness Book of World Records length of sari. But if we see the paintings and the pictures of Draupadi, she's no longer holding on to her sari. She has absolutely surrendered. She has given up. And Dushasana is pulling the sari. It shows that the minute you do Namasmarana, you transcend beyond your own body consciousness, your own ego, your own mind. You are able to identify yourself with something much higher. That something much higher is so high that a mere disrobing of your body doesn't seem to affect your esteem or self-respect in any manner, because you know you're not the body. That is the kind of elevation that Namasmarana can lead you to. And that is what happens to Draupadi, and that's why when actually the disrobing is happening, Draupadi has just folded her hands and she's standing without a care in the world.
Right, and many times, you know, when this scene is depicted, I would often think, you know, we define Namasmarana very differently based on how we look at this scene. For most of us, the grandest thing that happened in the scene was that sari coming, you know, that, as you said, that huge length of sari coming and saving her honor. When we look at that as the most important thing, we think that Namasmarana is successful only when a miracle happens. But actually, if you think of it as at that critical moment, Draupadi could just take her away from all these pains and think, because, you know, whenever it's even portrayed in media, it's always shown as like, you know, she is lost. As you're saying, that she has no cognition of what is happening around her. I think that is the essence of Namasmarana, because the ability of Namasmarana is to take you away from all your troubles. In fact, I think it was your analogy, a very beautiful one, where, you know, there is this bird of prey, probably an eagle or something, which is carrying its prey in its claws. And Swami would often say, you know, the moment the bird catches its prey, all these crows and other birds.
This was an analogy given by Ramakrishna Paramahamsa.
Right. They would all come and try to grab a part of that prey. One way of looking at it is, you know, the bird is so disturbed by all these birds trying to attack it. One way is it lets go. The moment it lets go the prey, and, you know, all the problems are gone. And Ramakrishna Paramahamsa would say that is the power of detachment. But the other way is, I think that was your extension probably, where this bird actually takes off to a flight, and we all know that the eagle can fly to much higher heights compared to these other scavenger birds. The moment it goes there, none of these can actually reach to it. I think that depicts Namasmarana beautifully, because that's exactly what happened with Draupadi. Standing there, you know, she had all these people laughing at her and making fun of her, and she had these troubles. The moment she took to Namasmarana, it was like taking that flight, where none of these problems could ever touch her peace of mind anymore. And I think that is what Namasmarana can do, and that is why it is Vishnu Smarana. There is no time, there is no event, or there is no scenario, or there is no surrounding which is required to do this Namasmarana.
And I was reading a discourse that Bhagwan delivered on the 26th of April, 1998. I think it was delivered in Kodaikanal.
So okay.
In that discourse, Swami was speaking about one important aspect of Namasmarana. And he began by saying that, you know, Arjuna once asks Krishna, and he says, Krishna, what is this? You know, we are the ones who are thinking of you always, but we are the ones who are suffering always. What is this? I mean, why is this difference? Why is this? Why is it that the same old question, the good suffer and the bad don't seem to be suffering? So Swami says Krishna brings out one very important difference over here. He says, Arjuna, what you are doing is only smarana. Smarana will never free you from bondage. Smarana will never free you from, this kind of problem, sorrows, ups and downs. In fact, Swami says that smarana will almost become like marana for you. It is the path of destruction. What you need is anusmarana. You know, you are lacking anusmarana and therefore you are suffering. Therefore, you are not able to see the wisdom and the beauty of the divine design. Once you are able to elevate your smarana to anusmarana, you will see all the difference that will happen. And in that discourse, Bhagwan goes on to further explain. I just thought that since that is a beautiful topic in itself, we will take it up possibly after a little break. We will take a break now, and on the other side of this break, we will go into a little more depth into this smarana and anusmarana that Swami speaks about, what is the difference, and that definitely gives a kind of a crowning glory moment for our satsang on Namasmarana.
जिसके सर पर हाथ हो तेरा, कौन बिगाड़े उसकी हर पल उसके साथ है बाबा, हर पल रक्षा उसकी।
ॐ साई जय साई श्री साई जय साई
राम साई राम साई राम साई राम साई राम सुमिरन जो भी करे
यही नाम सब दुख दूर करे साई नाम सुमिरन जो भी करे यही नाम सब दुख दूर करे भव सागर से पार उतारे जन्म जन्म के पाप हरे यही नाम सब दुख दूर करे साई राम साई राम साई राम बसाए तुम्हारी शरण जो आए कोई मनोरथ मन में बसाए तुम्हारी शरण जो आए
इन चरणों में मन चाहा फल बिन मांगे मिल जाए संपत्ति भंडार भरे
यही नाम सब दुख दूर करे
साई राम साई राम साई राम साई
तीर्थ धाम हमारा हम साई के पुजारी परती तीर्थ धाम हमारा हम साई के पुजारी
साई बाबा इस धरती पर शिव शक्ति अवतारी जब हो सर पे तुम्हारा जब हो सर पे साया तुम्हारा जब हो सर पे साया तुम्हारा
कौन किसी विपदा से डरे यही नाम सब दुख दूर करे
साई राम साई राम साई राम साई राम
साई गंगा साई जमुना साई मथुरा काशी साई तो है घट घट वासी अजर अमर अविनाशी
साई नाम ब्रह्मा साई नाम विष्णु साई नाम शिव शंकर
साई जय साई श्री साई जय साई ओम साई।
Welcome back, dear listeners. We are in the last concluding phase of this week's satsang. And we're talking about Smarana and what Swami had said about Anusmarana. Really, really fascinating, because many times whenever Swami would say, especially on, while speaking during the occasion of Akhanda Bhajan, Swami would say, you know, though we call this the Akhanda Bhajan, it is actually Akhanda Bhajan, because you have a time where it starts at one time and you end at one time. True Akhanda Bhajan is when you start doing Anusmarana, Swami would say, that when this act of singing the Lord's name goes constantly back in your mind. But you know, when you talk of this, we spoke about how, why we have certain rules in the ashram, dressing styles and, you know, the way people should speak, they should speak softly and things like that. It means that there are some things which are a taboo when you want to take the Lord's name or, you know, indulge in prayer. There are some places where you don't want to do it. There are some things when you're doing, you don't want to do this. Mm-hmm. You know, one particular thing which I often notice is, it's a tradition in India at least, where people who wear this, the sacred thread, what do you call it, janyam, right?
Janya.
You know, when they go into the loo, you would see them, they will remove it and they'll put it around their ear or something. In a sense, it is believed that there are these acts which are actually a little unholy compared to the others. So when you are doing this, there are some things you don't do, or, you know, you take a precaution when you do that. And, there are a lot of such traditions which are involved, where even when you build a house, you believe that, you know, the loo is supposed to be as far away as possible from, in the prayer room. So how is it that there are some times when you can't, when you're not supposed to take the Lord's name, then how do you do Anusmarana, right?
You know, even as you're saying this, one of our listeners seemed to have written to us, and, it's interesting what this listener writes.
Okay.
I quote from the email directly. I remember listening to John Hislop once, who said that he constantly has Sai Ram going on in his head, and it goes on at the back of his mind all the time, irrespective of what he's doing.
Right.
He takes Swami wherever he's going. And now there's no disappoint, Prem. This is amazing how Swami answers. The listener writes, when he goes to the toilet, he tells Swami, "Swami, I'm going to the toilet. If you want, you can come in. Otherwise, I'll join you in a while." And then the listener writes that, "I have tried his Om Sai Ram technique. It actually works wonders. Though I forget sometimes, whenever I remember to do it, I try to do it. It's a simple technique, but it gives you Swami." So I think, you know, this is Swami's way of answering that there's nothing like a time or a place. I also remember a story that the Balvikas teacher had told when he was... I had a Balvikas teacher who was a sir, you know.
Okay.
He's not an auntie, it was an uncle. And he was telling the stories of Hanuman. And one of the stories he said was, as Hanuman, you know, Hanuman is the greatest exponent of Ram Nam, doing Namasmarana. He's always chanting the Lord's name. And apparently as Hanuman was streaking across the skies, he was flying across, he notices a person who is answering the call of nature. You know, because you said loo and a lot of such things, even the male.
Right.
So he notices somebody there answering the call of nature, at the same time saying Ram, Ram, Ram. And he's so infuriated, saying that, you know, you bring together something that is so lowly with something that is so lofty. And therefore he goes there and lands one huge blow on the man's face, and so that he shuts up and doesn't, you know, take up the Lord's name during such times. And he flies away. And the teacher told us a story that as Hanuman lands in the presence of his Lord Rama, he sees that Rama's cheeks are swollen.
Okay.
And he says that, "Hanuman, when you land a blow to anybody who is chanting my name, it's equivalent to landing a blow onto me, because one who chants my name becomes one with me." You know, that, you know, when we think of all these together, I don't think that there is anything like a particular time that we should not take the Lord's name, a particular place, a particular season. Come on, this is the most redeeming thing in the universe, man. You can't say don't do this during this, during that, it is bad, it is, there's nothing like that. I mean, from whatever we read of Swami's discourse, it becomes evident that Sarvada Sarvakaleshu Sarvatra Harichintana, Swami would not thump and say this again and again if it was taboo to chant it at some place or chant it at some time, or, you know, it's like that. So while we have some restrictions in place in the ashram also, I'm sure you also know it, Prem, these restrictions are to ensure that during this time the mind doesn't go elsewhere but remains on the Lord. The mind doesn't get distracted to some worldly things, sensory things, the passions don't get inflamed, and it remains on the Lord. So all the restrictions that we observe anywhere, all the taboos that we observe anywhere are, I feel, in spirit to ensure that your mind remains focused on the Lord and doesn't get distracted. When that is the case, if at all you are saying that, you know, in a sensory inflamed place, I'm remembering the Lord. When I pass across a bar, should I not remember the Lord? Because, come on, the bar will not make the Lord's name unholy. It's in all possibility the Lord's name may make the bar holy. It's like a bar of soap, you know. You don't say that I won't use the soap in the dirtiest of parts because, you know, the soap will get dirty. The soap never gets dirty. The soap always cleans. The nature of the soap is to cleanse. So I don't think there's any sort of restriction whatsoever regarding the time, the place, the duration of Namasmarana. It is something that can be done always. And this definitely can't be used by us as an excuse from doing Namasmarana.
And even as you're saying this, you know, there are two stories which are coming to my mind. One is, of course, what Swami would say about another great devotee. You know, this time Arjuna goes and asks Krishna, who is your greatest devotee? And he mentions about one man who's a Brahmin who's walking around with an axe. I think you know that story.
Sword.
Uh-huh. Right. And he is actually very upset with, I think, Draupadi. He says, I want to kill Draupadi because she keeps calling my Lord at all the odd times. And you know, Lord.
In fact, I think he wants to kill Draupadi, he wants to kill Narada, he wants to kill Prahalada.
And Arjuna
also,
right,
yes.
Right. And one of the reasons he says is, you know, this Draupadi keeps calling the Lord at all odd times and my Lord has to run, you know. Here is actually another thing. It's not about holy and unholy, but it is about that a love which has gone into probably a level of Vatsalya Prema, you know, where you feel that, no, my Lord should not feel, should not have any discomfort because I am taking the Lord for my benefit. Now, that reminds me of another very, very beautiful story. It was an interview which was done by the Telugu team. If I'm not wrong, that person's name is Subbareddy. He works in the canteen still. And he came to Swami when he was a 10-year-old boy. You know, he comes from a very small village in Nellore in Andhra Pradesh.
Mm-hmm.
As a 10-year-old boy, he accompanied some auntie who came to see Swami in the 60s. So there was nobody there and he came. There's a long story of how he came. We'll just skip that part. So he comes and I think around 12:30 or something, they come and land up in Puttaparthi and they're told that Swami will come around 4 o'clock. You can go have your lunch and, you know, take rest and come. So this boy says, no, I have to see Swami. Until I see Swami, I'm not going to have my food. So he stands under a tree where he can see Swami's room. And he's just...
This is a 10-year-old boy?
10-year-old boy. You know, he's standing there. And his aunt comes and says, no, you come and have your food, take rest. He says, no, till I see Swami, I'm not going to eat my food. And it's around 12:30 or 1 in the afternoon. He's standing there. You know, within 15 minutes, he sees that Swami's door opens. Swami comes out and Swami blesses him and Swami points to the stomach.
Wow.
Saying that, go, sweet, have your, you know, food and come. So this boy comes, you know, he's so thrilled, he comes back home, he comes running to his mother and, you know, he describes that excitement with which he comes and describes to Swami, to his mother. He says, you have no idea how beautiful Swami is. You know, that's how the boy tells the mother. He said, he's so beautiful, he can be nothing other than God. You know, that's how he describes, you know, he's so beautiful, he's so graceful, he's there like that and, you know, I'm so thrilled I had Swami's darshan. And, you know, when you spoke about Ajamila and when you said, you know, the upbringing is so important and really reminded of this part of the story because the mother tells this little boy, he says, it's not enough. Even if you've seen the God himself, it's not enough. That gives you nothing. So this boy says, no, then what should I do? And the mother says, you have to do Namasmarana. See, even after having seen the Lord, if you don't do Namasmarana, you're not going to, you know, gain the full benefit out of it. So this boy promises his mother that I'll definitely do. So, you know, it's a very small family. It's a, you know, family which has a small land, which has a little bit of cattle. And, you know, the father takes care of the land. The elder son helps the father. So this boy who's the younger son, he takes the cattle around for grazing and all that. And that's all. They make their living through this thing.
Mm.
So this boy would take the cattle for grazing. And he would send the cattle for grazing. He would sit and do Namasmarana. His mother gave him a Japmala. So he would sit there and do. So after about a week or so, he comes back to his mother and he says, you know, mother, I've observed something which is very, very phenomenal. So mother says, what is it? You know, earlier when I used to take the cattle for grazing, I had to be right behind their back to ensure they don't go into the wrong places or get into trouble. But ever since I've started doing Namasmarana, I find that the cattle have become so disciplined. You know, I don't have to go and take care of them. They are fine by themselves. And so the mother tells this boy, he says, you know, see, that is, you know, that's the greatness of the Lord. If you take the Lord's name, the Lord will come and do your work. you know, he will take care of the cattle which you are supposed to take care of.
Hmm.
And imagine this 10-year-old boy, he says that, you know, how cruel of me, just because I want to take the Lord's name, I want him to come and do my work. So he decides that I will not do when I have other work to do. I will not chant the Lord's name when I have other work to do.
So that my Lord doesn't get burdened.
So that my Lord doesn't come and do my work. And, you know, so he tells his mother, this is the thing. So mother tells him, you know, you're a crook. You want to escape doing namasmarana. That's why you're saying this. So the boy says, no, Amma, I'm not doing that. I will do all my work. I'll come back in the evening. I'll help you with your kitchen work. I'll help you with the housework. And from 8 to 9, I'll sit and do namasmarana. Okay, and the mother says, all right. So this becomes a practice now. So 8 to 9, without fail, he sits and does namasmarana. And after about a few weeks, another aunt of his comes from Puttaparthi. And this aunt has stayed there for about a month or so. So he comes running to her and says, you know, what is happening in Puttaparthi, how Swami and all that. So this boy asks this aunt, what is the schedule of Swami? You know, what time does he come, what time does he retire and all that. So then this aunt tells him that, you know what, Swami retires by 7:30.
Hmm.
And by 7:30, lights are off in his room, which means Swami goes to bed. And imagine this boy sitting and thinking, 7:30 Swami goes to bed, 8 o'clock he must be asleep, and 8 to 9 and taking the name of the Lord.
Disturbing
and,
him.
And he asks his aunt, you know, when I take Swami's name, you think Swami will listen? And she says, yeah, whoever takes Swami's name, Swami listens. So he says, 8 to 9, Swami is sleeping and I'm disturbing. And he comes and tells his mother, I've stopped taking, I'm not going to do namasmarana anymore because it is disturbing Swami. Okay, and then all these aunts and mothers come and, you know, try to put some sense. He says, no, Swami is omniscient. You know, he's all over the place. He's beyond all these things. You can do namasmarana. This boy is still in this confusion, you know, am I troubling Swami? When should I take Swami's name? Just as we're saying, which place I can chant Swami's name, during which times I can chant Swami's name. And with all these confusions, one day he finally goes for another darshan, accompanies another aunt, and he goes and, you know, there he has this beautiful experience. For 4-5 days, every day he goes from morning Nagar Sankirtan to the Suprabhatam, follows all the schedules. On the 4th day, he, you know, gets a cold and a fever. He's not able to go for Suprabhatam. So on the 6th day, Swami comes and calls him for an interview.
Okay? Mm.
Only he and Swami is there in the interview room. And Swami asks him, if for 4 days I saw you for Suprabhatam, 5th day I didn't see you.
Wow.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
And this boy, with all his innocence, you know, he tells Swami, Swami, first of all, the bhajan hall is dark during Suprabhatam. Okay. And secondly, you don't come for Suprabhatam. How do you know whether I'm there or not?
Mm.
And Swami tells him, you fool, I know. I'm at all places at all times. I don't have to be there physically to see you. So this boy is very thrilled. And then he explains, Swami, no, Swami, I had this chest congestion. So I start coughing if I get up early in the morning. That's why I stopped coming. Swami said, oh, you have chest congestion. And what Swami does, you know, he waves his hand, materializes vibhuti,
mm-hmm.
and pulls this boy's shirt and, you know, the vest and the banyan or whatever it is, and starts applying it on his chest. So nicely he applies it on his chest and all that, and this boy is so very thrilled, he comes back home and tells his mother this is what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And imagine the mother starts shouting at him. He says, how dare you allow Swami to do that little work of lifting your shirt? Why can't you do it yourself?
Mm-hmm.
You know, this boy says, I never thought of that. But Amma, you have no idea. If you stand so close to Swami, you can't think of anything else. You will just keep looking at his face and be lost in that beauty. So, you know, this happens and his cold is gone and all that. And it's just after a day or so, he realizes that ever since Swami put that vibhuti on his chest, you know, rubbed that vibhuti, it's like a tape recorder, this japam of Om Sai Ram goes on in his head. It's almost like a blessing that Swami gave him in that instant when Swami applied vibhuti on his chest. You know, when you look at it, here's this boy who is in so much of confusion. When should I do? When should I not do? Is this the right time to do? When I'm doing this, can I take Swami's name? Swami has solved it in 1 second by applying the vibhuti in his chest. And he says constantly, and you know, he is about 65 now, he says till today, without a moment's pause, that Om Sai Ram goes on in my mind. That's a wow. blessing that Swami gave me.
Beautiful. And you know, as you were narrating this, I was just thinking about the suspense we left our reader, listeners in regarding that discourse on the 26th of April 1998. You know, this person definitely is in a stage of anusmarana. I'm not saying after Swami applied vibhuti on his chest, even before that, see Prem, if there is this person who gets up in the morning and he wants to think of, he wants to do Namasmarana. Then he says, no, let me not do Namasmarana because the Lord is sleeping now. And then lunchtime, he's about to think of Swami and he says, no, let me not do Namasmarana because I am going to disturb the Lord's lunch. So, this way, if he is doing it, can you say that he's not thinking about the Lord? He might not be doing Namasmarana as such, as in taking the name and chanting it 100 times. But guess what? His thoughts are always on the Lord. And more importantly, his thoughts are on the Lord for the Lord's sake, not for any benefit of his. He doesn't want to do Namasmarana because he wants to gain any benefit or he wants to gain peace of mind. See, that is why we take up Namasmarana. I want peace of mind. There are financial troubles for me. I want freedom from it.
And I have to think of it in the last minute.
Yes, that is also there. That's also the ultimate goal.
Ultimate goal.
Before I die, I have to think of the Lord, so let me practice all life. So our Namasmarana also is so filled with selfishness. And in that discourse, Bhagwan says that is what Krishna tells Arjuna. He says, Arjuna, your smarana is not anusmarana because your smarana is filled with apeksha, expectation. You have an eye on the result and the fruit always, even as you are doing the action. Even as you are thinking of me, you are thinking of me because, you know, thinking of the Lord is good and thinking of the Lord will give me permanent joy, permanent bliss. Oh God, see, it's with an eye on the result that you are thinking of me. And Krishna then says there, in the discourse, Bhagwan says that Krishna tells Arjuna that apeksha and nirapeksha, there are the two ways of thinking of the Lord.
Okay.
Nirapeksha is without any expectation, simply for the joy of it. For the joy of it, when you think of the Lord always, then just like this boy, you know, he was thinking of Swami all the while, concerned about Swami's, how will it affect Swami? Of course, he had Swami in a physical form to think about it like that. But there is no doubt in saying that this boy's first priority was Swami, possibly the only priority was Swami. That's why, you know, he's thinking of Swami but not doing Namasmarana. So beautiful it is. I'm not doing Namasmarana, but I'm always thinking of Swami. I'm not doing Namasmarana because I'm always concerned about Swami. I don't want to do Namasmarana now because Swami will be doing this, because Swami will be doing that. In the process, he's thinking of Swami always. And that is what is Anusmarana. Swami says, when you think of the Lord without any expectation, you know, you don't do Namasmarana to get freedom from disease or freedom from illness or freedom from monetary financial problems or freedom from relationship problems. No, I just do it. I do it for not even like I will get joy out of it, so I'll do. I'll just do it. I think unless we experience it, we can't explain it. And I'm sure all of us at some point in time, for a little time at least, we would have experienced the joy that comes from this kind of a selfless smarana. So this kind of selfless smarana is anusmarana, and I think it should be our endeavor to progress from smarana, namasmarana, to this kind of anusmarana.
And you know, that precisely is the reason probably God comes down in a human form. You know, probably thinking of Vishnu, when you say Vishnu smarana, probably we will not think like this. You know, when we think of Swami in a physical form, he comes with a certain attributes. There are certain likes and dislikes. I like white dress. I don't like white dress. I like women clad in saris. I don't like, you know, women wearing modern clothes. Whatever it is, whatever is our idea of the Lord, you know, having preferences. If at every stage you're thinking that, you know, will Swami like this? Will Swami approve of this? No, I should not do this because Swami will not like it. You know, it actually, without your knowledge, it kind of, slips on to that selflessness. You're doing what Swami wants, which is actually for your benefit, which is going to, in all ways going to be helpful to you. But you're doing it absolutely selflessly because thinking that, you know, this is what Swami will want, this is what Swami will not want, this is what Swami will expect me to do, this is Swami's command, what has Swami told about this, what does Swami expect us to do in such situations. All the time, when you, as you said, that Namasmarana actually goes on to a state where you're living for Swami, asking all the time, you know, what would Swami want me to do at this moment?
Beautiful. I think by the end of each discussion, we are intuitively moved and forced towards a kind of generalization, just as we came for, we generalized, you know, Shravanam as any kind of input that we receive. Kirtanam as expressing gratitude to the Lord every moment of our life. That is Kirtanam. That is singing His glory. I feel Vishnu Smaranam or Namasmarana comes to this Anusmarana. Anusmarana where, you know, my thoughts are only about the Lord. And it's not as if it goes to a level where I'm not even able to distinguish this is the world, this is the Lord, nothing like that. It's only the Lord, 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 and only the Lord. God is first priority. I remember Bhagya sir would often tell this. He would say, there are only two rules. Rule number one is, God is first priority. God is always right. Only God. That is rule number one. Mm-hmm. And rule number two is, if at all you have any doubts, please refer to rule one. You know? So that is how he would say. I think that is a good generalized definition of Vishnu Smaranam. It may exhibit itself as we chanting the name of the Lord or thinking about the name of the Lord or constantly ruminating over it. But unless that is coupled with, you know, concern for the Lord, you know, passion for the Lord and selflessness that comes in, because the Lord is more important than anything else. And so, you know, it's a kind of a funny situation, because anybody else who sees this might feel that this person is so selfless, he or she has no desires of his or her own. But actually the person concerned doesn't feel that it's any selflessness, because I am doing it for the very reason of my existence, which is my Lord. So I think that kind of leading of life is what is characterized as Vishnu Smaranam, the third mode of worship in the Navaveda Bhakti Marga.
Right, and that's precisely our journey within this Vishnu Smaranam. If you take this as the path, I think this is what it is. You know, first you give value to that act of doing Namasmarana, then you say that I dedicate time. You know, I have to do this. I give priority to this, just like I give priority to my other things. And then it comes to a state where I'm not going to achieve anything out of this. This itself is an achievement. You know, taking the Lord's name itself is all the benefit I need.
Hmm.
I don't need to get anything out of it. I think that's what Swami meant when he said Anusmarana, where, you know, it's your breath. I mean, you don't need to be reminded to take it. You don't need to be reminded, you know, you don't need a doctor's prescription to be told that you have to breathe to be alive. And I think that's what happens when you do start doing Anusmarana.
And in order to, like as I said, there is a symptom for everything. It is using the symptom that you are able to diagnose what it is. In the same way, beautifully as dilated by Swami in that discourse on the 26th of April, a symptom of Anusmarana is when you do action without an eye on the results. When you are able to do karma phala tyaga, you are doing Anusmarana, irrespective of whether you are, you know, actually taking the name of the Lord and saying Krishna Krishna or Rama Rama, like that king who never had uttered Rama, because Rama is something too precious to be scattered out in public, as you know. So it's not about the external manifestation of Namasmarana or Vishnu Smarana that matters, but the best way to see how we are progressing in Namasmarana is how selfless our actions are. And by selfless, I mean how we do actions for the sake of pleasing the Lord, that's all. So in that sense, it is not as if, see, what may happen is, if I don't have an eye on the result, you know, in every company they give you a result, they say you must meet this target, you have to do this, because that is what ensures that you put in your 100%. So this is a magical situation when we are doing Namasmarana, where I am able to put in that much effort without actually having an eye on the result. It is not as if because there is no result to achieve, I become lazy, lackadaisical. You know, I take rest and say, God do your best. It is the true case of we doing our best and God doing the rest, because I have a reason why I'm putting in the effort, because I want to please my Lord. So I'm putting in 100% effort. At the same time, it doesn't matter. The results don't matter, because I'm not doing it for the sake of the result. So I think the more and more we are able to do this kind of nishkama karma, it shows how much of Anusmarana we are involved in.
Right. And that really is the benefit of knowing somebody like Swami, having somebody like Swami in our lives. Because it becomes so much more easy to, you know, to bring this Smarana to more than just a prayer or just a mental exercise.
Remembrance. Huh?
Right. You know, bring it to everyday life. Every day ask ourselves, what is it, you know, Swami would want us to do? That, as you said, it's not Smarana only if you just say Om Sai Rama or anything like that. All of this becomes Smarana. You know, when you're thinking that, am I giving discomfort to Swami? Will Swami be happy with me? Have I pleased Swami today? I think even that is Smarana before going to sleep. Even thinking that, Swami, when I wake up tomorrow, the first thought I should have is of you. that becomes smarana. And when you become, when you wake up in the morning, then you get that first thought. You know, you don't expect, no, I've started my day with Swami's thought. Let's see how beautiful this day is going to be. It's not like that. Already your day, I mean, your moment has become beautiful when you get up and you think of Swami. I think that's when where the joy lies within the act and not in the result of the act. And I think that defines Namasmarana.
So I think that is more or less what we were inspired to say, dear listeners. As always, your feedback is welcome. Please write to us at listener@radiosai.org. The next fortnight, we will be going back to the Ramkatha. And we shall continue with this Navvidha Bhakti Marga. We have finished Ravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam. We will come to another beautiful path, which is Pada Sevanam. And we will take that up after the next fortnight, because the next fortnight will be the Ramkatha Rasavahini fortnight. But that should not restrict you from, yes, sharing your thoughts, your feedback, whatever you wish on the themes that are covered, because it, whenever possible, we will bring that up in our discussion. Even otherwise, they definitely form valuable inputs for us here, because after all, this is a satsang and this is not a speech. With that, we offer this segment at the lotus feet of our dear Swami and express our heartfelt gratitude to him for everything. We will end with this song, on the other side of which, as always, there will be the segment Love to Love by Brother Chandu.
స్మరణం సాయి రూప ధ్యానం సాయి నామ స్మరణం సాయి రూప ధ్యానం సదా మాకు ఇహ పరమ సుఖ సాధనం సాయి నామ స్మరణం సాయి రూప ధ్యానం సదా మాకు ఇహ పరమ సుఖ సాధనం సాయి నామ స్మరణం సాయి రూప ధ్యానం
ప్రపంచ భవంతు నిగ్రహించే జ్ఞానమనే శక్తి. భగవంతు నిగ్రహించే జ్ఞానమనే శక్తి పొందగలుగు జన్మయిదే అని దాటిన సాయి. భగవంతు నిగ్రహించే జ్ఞానమనే శక్తి పొందగలుగు జన్మయిదే అని దాటిన సాయి. సాయి నామస్మరణం సాయి రూప ధ్యానం సదా మాకు ఇక తరాల దొసగు సాధనం. సాయి నామస్మరణం సాయి రూప ధ్యానం